This episode of Long Night with Vish Khanna was recorded on Saturday, December 12th, 2015.
Coming to you live from the Great Hall in Toronto, Canada, it's Long Night with Vish Khanna! Coming up on the show, musician and thinker Casey Mejia is here! We have author and DJ Denise Benson! Comedian Matt O'Brien is in the house! Bicycles as our house band. My name is James Keast. Please welcome to the stage a man who's disturbingly excited about Christmas, Vishal Khanna.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Long Night. How you doing, everybody? I noticed that you wouldn't cheer unless the applause lady put up the sign. That is a bad sign. Are you guys seriously, legitimately, sincerely doing well? Yeah. Very good. James Keast, how you doing?
I'm well. It's Saturday. It's throwing me off.
Why?
We usually do this on a Friday.
Normally it's a Friday,
It's like a weekend Letterman. It's weird.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good. I want to thank the Bicycles. How about a hand for the Bicycles, everybody? You know, you mentioned things making you feel weird, but, you know, it's the festive season.
It is true.
And you kind of made fun of me because I was so excited about the festive season.
Did someone say festive season?
Uh-oh.
Festive?
What? What is that? Yeah, who has a microphone? What's going on? Hello? Who is... Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mrs. Claus. Wow. Mrs. Claus. Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. Oh, hi. Oh, good handshake.
Oh,
yes.
I'm very businesslike. Wow, what a surprise.
Oh, yeah. Someone says festive season and glitter drops and I show up.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, what are you doing here?
Oh, well, I heard that every single person on the nice list would be at the Great Hall tonight, so I'm coming to scope out the good ones.
Oh, isn't that sweet, ladies and gentlemen? You're all nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait a second. What is going on here?
She's a tool of consumerism.
What? Who is
she? She's a tool of consumerism.
No, I heard you. I just don't know why you're saying that. Who is this? Who are you?
My name is Krampus. I'm Krampus.
Christmas?
No, Krampus. Let me tell you. Here. Let me explain to you who
you're
I am.
You're going to read your own Wikipedia entry?
In Austro-Bavarian Alpine folklore, Krampus is a horned anthropomorphic figure who, during the Christmas season, punishes children who have misbehaved. In contrast with Saint Nicholas, your soon-to-be ex-husband, I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
It's a bad marriage,
Come
most
on,
likely.
Hey. Now, you sit down, sir.
You're insulting Mrs. Claus.
I can't believe you're doing this.
And if you're wondering why I'm not in my costume, you think the laziest son of a gun in Christmas history is going to get dressed until the very last minute? Yes, he will. December 24th, 1159. That's when I put the horns on.
God,
Until then, sloppy preppy.
Oh, hold on. Let me get your jacket for you. Let me get
That's
it. I can
look
do
how
it.
Nice she is. She's helping Krampus.
You're going to give me opposite lesions. You're going to heal my scabs. I don't want you to.
So you're just like the evil, you're the anti-Santa Claus?
I like to consider myself more of like a...
You can do it. Come on. Describe yourself.
Like a parasite living in Santa Claus's butt.
Oh, everyone needs parasites. You know, rhinos have birds on them that eat the parasites, so they stay healthy. You're keeping us healthy.
I'm more like if a bird pecked a hole inside of the rhino.
Like
and
a
the rhino
pecker.
Bled
I love
a black
those.
Tar.
Okay, all right. You guys are clearly having some kind of
I like
weird
your beard,
argument.
Though. It's good. It reminds
Mrs. Claus,
me of
have you heard about this
cool
Krampus
Santa.
Before?
Oh, yes. We know about the Krampus.
Did you just say shofar?
What?
I love shofars. Those things are great.
I didn't say that at all. No, I asked if she'd heard of you because I don't think a lot of people know Krampus.
I do. I know the Krampus. We get a lot of people talking about the Krampus and worried that you're going to ruin everything, but I think everyone deserves to do their job, and you do your job well, so kudos, Krampus.
What the... I can't believe how nice she is. You know what? I want a clearer picture of both of you, because I think people need to know exactly what you stand for, and I don't know. Do you keep
Can
a naughty or not?
Can I make one point?
What? Yeah,
one point
go ahead.
It just occurred to me. If you go swimming... like a half hour after eating, uh-huh. and 1 hour, you get Krampus.
Oh, well done, Krampus.
Well done, Krampus. All right.
I don't take compliments.
No, oh, you're going to get more of them. You're
oh,
so cute.
Oh, my God. Listen, hey, Krampus, do you keep a naughty or nice list the way Mrs. Claus and Santa do?
I keep a should be naughtier list.
Oh.
People just should be naughtier.
Okay, all right. Listen, I want to, because it's the end of the year, I thought we'd look at some of the, oh God, just stop glaring at Mrs. Claus. She's a kindly old woman. No offense about the old thing.
This is my resting face.
That's your resting, okay.
This is mine.
Resting Krampus face. I hadn't heard of that. Look at
opposite
that.
Opposite of me.
Yes.
Okay, listen, I thought we'd look through some of the, you know, the newsmakers of the year.
Sure.
And maybe just let me know what each of you think of them. I thought your perspectives might be interesting. So why don't we start with, what about Donald Trump? Mrs. Claus, what do you think of Donald Trump?
Donald Trump is doing his best. He's doing his best, and I bet someone out there is very proud of him. But I think he's stealing my hairstyle.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Krampus, what do you think of Donald Trump?
Should be naughtier. Should be naughtier.
Donald Trump should be naughtier?
Yeah, yeah.
He so just you see the good in him?
No, I think he's not bad enough, you know? Like, I think he's really got to somehow... It's very hard. He's very close to the top level of worst.
That's what I...
But there's a couple of extra things he needs to do to be to be as naughty as possible. One of them is he hasn't made a kid rock song his official anthem for his campaign yet.
Sure, yeah, uh-huh.
I think if he does that, that'll push him into totally naughty.
Okay. Here's another one. Let's start with Krampus on this one. Yeah. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
Ooh, the Canada Daddy.
Could be naughtier. Could be naughtier.
Why could he be naughtier?
Well, he could have not let all those people in. That would be so naughty.
Right.
If he did that. He could. I do like that he's probably not going to change Bill C-51 at all. I do like that. I like that he's going to keep the Senate basically in place. What else? I like that he was so smug about having women and having picked women in positions that aren't that powerful actually.
Right. Okay.
Cabinet. I thought that was pretty naughty.
Okay.
But
so
he could be naughtier.
He could be even naughtier than that.
Could be naughtier.
Mrs. Claus, what do you make of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau?
Oh, I like him. He takes a good photograph.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a picture of little baby Justin on the fridge in Santa's workshop. When I go to make cookies, I look at the picture of him and go. There's the Canada Daddy, yes. And then I make gingerbread men in the shape of him, because I think he's great. I really do. Okay. I like him. I like all the photos of him and hugging people. And there's you know what I don't miss? You think I would like it, but I don't miss the sweater vests and the kittens. I think he takes the picture the way he wants to and represents him.
He's a good looking rebel.
Oh.
Oh
well,
God.
Why don't you
all
just
right.
marry him? Why don't you just marry him?
All right. Now, Mrs. Claus, this might be a bit obscure for you. I don't know how much you are, how up on the trends you are. What about the singer-songwriter Courtney Barnett? She was in the news a lot.
Oh, yeah. She won a bunch of awards, didn't she?
I don't know.
I think she did. I'd give her one. I'd give her an award for being great and adorable. She's at the top of the nice list. Could be at the top. Not could be naughty.
What about you, Krampus?
Who is she?
She's a singer-songwriter.
What is she in the news for?
Let's just move on.
See, this is why you don't know, because she's great. She's
could
lovely.
Be naughtier.
She put out
could be naughtier. I'm gonna go out on a limb.
Okay.
Could be naughtier.
How about this? For my money, maybe put out the record of the year.
Has she written any murder ballads?
What is a murder ballad?
She's not writing murder ballads. It's not going on my playlist.
All right. All right.
When
all right.
I'm on the elliptical at the lowest setting.
Krampus, pharmaceutical executive Martin Shkreli. You know this guy? This is the guy who drove up the price of the AIDS drug and then bought a Wu-Tang Clan album. Weird sentence.
Yeah.
Can you think about him for a second? What do you make of that guy?
Could not be naughtier.
Okay.
Naughtiest.
So
the,
what?
The emo thing is what really pushes him.
Yeah, he's got the bangs.
He has like a Take It Back Sunday forehead tattoo. That's pretty.
popular.
Oh, okay. All right.
Krampus.
We got it. Mrs. Claus?
Well, it's a tricky one to answer because I think I wish I knew him when he was a child, because then I feel like I could comment on him, you know, like being nice and lovely, but I don't like him.
Oh my God. Oh, okay.
But I bet he could make a good cup of hot cocoa. I bet if he could do one thing, then it would be that.
Isn't a cup of hot cocoa like you just boil some water and put powder in?
Oh, no, there's so much more to it. You need hot milk.
Okay, guys, I don't want to start a cooking segment right now. We got to move on. I just want one more thing.
Sure.
One more thing. Why don't we, maybe either one of you, Joey Bautista of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh.
He did the bat flip, and then they lost.
You know, that's okay, because there's spirit there. If you're going to throw a baseball bat that far, you're a winner inside. You know,
sure.
You got arms that are winners, you got eyes that are winners, you're seeing your goals and you're throwing your bat towards it.
Good, very good. That's what I expected. Krampus?
Could be naughtier.
Could, that seems to be
I
your
standard. I do respect he wore a fake beard for an entire year. I think that's pretty brave.
That is, what? You think that was like a fake, like a Drake beard or something?
Yeah, I heard he just had this, one of those roll-ons he would just, every morning, roll the beard on.
And that, to you, seems naughty? That's Krampus. That's
well,
what Krampus likes.
It's deceit, and I like that.
Okay, all right. All right, listen.
Can I teach you a move? This is called the Krampus Claw.
Ooh.
Say it to make a point. Could be naughtier.
Okay.
Krampus Claw.
Now I'm gonna teach you one.
Okay.
I care about you.
It's okay.
It's not a language I understand. None of those words made sense.
All right. Look, I think maybe a true test of each of your characters would be to assess one another. So why don't we start with Krampus? Krampus, you've been on here a little while now, and I think you made some of us a little uncomfortable. What do you make of Mrs. Claus?
Oh, here we go.
Is it my body language that made you uncomfortable?
It's with the
toes telling you I'm not... comfortable with the
wardrobe, the general lack of care for coming on a big talk show. Yeah, this.
The fact I haven't faced the person next to me since essentially sitting next to
them. This is James Keith.
To me, they're just a knee.
By the way, Mrs. Claus, I feel like James might be your type.
Oh, I'm avoiding eye contact because.
Okay, yeah.
Well, when I came onto this quote stage, unquote, I deserve that. Had one intention, and that was to embarrass you for being a Jew for Jesus, for your overall too good, sweet as pie mentality. I didn't like it, but after hearing you be so kind about Donald Trump and Justin Trudeau in particular, you have changed my ways and my belief. And
wow.
I'd like to become a Christian.
How about a hand for Krampus, everyone? He had a bit of a transformation.
I think you're wonderful.
Come to Jesus moment. All right, well, that was very sweet. Mrs. Claus, how about you? What would you make of Krampus?
I think Krampus knows that time is running out to get on the nice list. And I don't believe you for a second. You say you like deceit. I think you're lying to my face, Krampus.
Whoa.
I think, Krampus, for once, I'm going to say something mean. You are the opposite of a smile.
Whoa.
You are a pie that has cooled for too long. You make me feel like I've never been hugged.
Oh, man. Mrs. Claus.
But I still care about you.
Now I'm just confused.
Welcome to Christmas.
Mrs. Claus and Krampus, everybody. What a nice union that was. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with Casey Mejia. Stick around.
The role of Mrs. Claus was played by Haley Kellett of The Making Box, and the role of Krampus was played by comedian Nick Flanagan. James Keese appeared as himself.
This episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero, the finest pizzeria in all of Guelph, Ontario. They've got delicious gourmet pizzas, or choose from an array of fresh ingredients and make whatever you like. Calzones, wings, panzerotti, salads, breadsticks, garlic bread. Pizza Trocadero has it all. You can find them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph or visit them online at trocaderoguelph.ca. That's TrocaderoGuelph.ca. Call them at 519-829-2444 for pickup or delivery.
That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade. All right, we're back on Long Night. Take your seats, everyone. Take your seats. How about that Mrs. Claus and Krampus?
Yeah, that was weird. I'm confused about something, though.
What?
Well, Mrs. Krampus, oops.
Did they get married on stage? What happened?
There was some chemistry, I have to say.
Yeah.
Mrs. Claus described Krampus as a pie that has cooled too long.
Mm-hmm.
That's still just like a pie, right? Like it doesn't spoil. It's just
no.
It's like I still want that pie.
Is it possible you're overthinking that bit?
I'm just really taken with the pie.
Are you hungry?
I might be.
I think you're just
like
hungry.
I want more pie details. Okay. Was it a blueberry pie?
Can find out after the show.
We'll check in on the pie.
Okay. Our first guest is well known for her work as a singer and songwriter in the beloved Toronto band Obijou. And as the host of the CBC Radio 1 program, The Doc Project, please say hello to Casey Messia, everyone. Hi, Casey. How's it going?
Good, Beach. How are you?
I'm well. I'm feeling festive and good, and it's nice to see so many nice people in the audience. I'm not just fishing for applause. It's just nice to be here. Yeah. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm kind of disappointed that I don't get to participate in a Christmas skit.
Oh, well, I didn't
but
think...
But that's okay.
I was not... You're no one's ever said that.
Well...
Ever. That sentence has never been uttered by anyone.
It looked like they were having so much fun. I think that I would rather pretend to be someone else than who I actually
right.
am.
Right. Are you bored? I'm the same way. Are you just bored? You're just bored with yourself? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I just think that there's an opportunity here for you and I to do a Christmas skit.
Nah, okay.
See, we tried to book Santa Claus, and it turns out that's a tough get at this time of year. So.
But you're pretty close.
Yeah, I know. And then turns out I wasn't that into it.
Okay.
I had two very heated phone conversations with this man.
Fair enough.
Demanding he be Santa Claus, and it was really ugly, actually.
Okay. Fair enough.
He said he was too, he's self-conscious because he's too white, he's too fat, he's too got a beard. And I said, you know what, you're not that white. It was a mean, it got ugly, see?
Also not true. I'm pretty white.
You are pretty white. Yeah, no, it's fine. Now, Casey, let's focus in on you and not that ugliness that was me calling James names. Let's start with your show. I'm intrigued by it. What is The Doc Project?
Well, The Doc Project is a half-hour radio show on CBC Radio 1. Uh-huh. And we show radio documentaries made in Canada about people living in Canada and around the world. So, yeah, that's the show in short form. And it's at 11:30 on Tuesdays when everyone is listening after Q.
Oh, I see. That's actually a good slot.
It is a pretty good slot.
Right.
Yeah.
So what is an example of like a recent story that The Doc Project may have told or a recent episode?
Well, this Tuesday we have a show about a group of people that left Peterborough to move to a small town in Saskatchewan called Palmer.
Mm-hmm. Well, hang on a second.
Whoa.
Someone from Palmer in the audience? Palmer, Saskatchewan got a cheer.
Okay.
Where did that cheer emanate from? Oh, now they're climbing up. Are you from Palmer? You're from Palmer? Are you from Palmer? You just cheer for geography? Okay.
Cold
what?
Pie.
Pol Pot? I don't hear so well.
Things are getting weird.
I thought that was odd myself.
So a bunch of university students graduated from school and didn't know what to do with their lives, so they decided to go to rural Saskatchewan.
That makes no sense. Why would they do that to themselves? No offense, I like Saskatchewan.
You know, but the documentary is called But For Me, It's Utopia. So,
oh, for you personally?
No, that's what the documentary
is
called. It's called For Me, It's Utopia. It's
turning into an Abbott and Costello routine.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and it just, who makes the documentary? Like, do you make the documentary?
No, I don't make the documentaries. So I introduce and I interview the doc makers after the documentary is showed or listened to on the radio.
Okay, so who can contribute a documentary to your show?
You can pitch a documentary if you're a freelancer or if you've worked with the CBC before.
Okay.
So Vish, if you want to pitch.
Me? I don't know if they like me there.
Well, okay. It's awkward.
Do you have a sympathy card under the applause card? I could pitch a documentary. Which? No, I'm kidding. They like me just fine. I still do some work there, actually.
Yeah, so they take documentaries from freelancers, and they have a really neat program called the CBC Doc Project Mentorship Program.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Where if you work at the CBC, you can pitch to be mentored by a veteran documentary maker to make a documentary that will eventually be showed or listened to on the radio.
So just to clarify, like, you say it's people who work for the CBC or freelance currently?
Yes.
But so if anyone here wanted to pitch a doc, is there a way in to do that?
You could, definitely. You know, it's about the story. So if you have a compelling pitch, I'm sure it would be considered.
Now, I am working on a story right now about a guy named Krampus.
Right.
He is really fascinating.
Yes.
And I think it'll be a compelling story. Like, do you think they'd go for that, a Krampus story?
Yes, absolutely.
Is there a tone to the Doc Project? Is it mostly serious stuff? Can it be funny?
It's all across the board. We have stories or documentaries about Syrian refugee experiences. We have a doc that was about someone's first experience getting a Brazilian wax. So it's about the story. And
wow.
Yeah, it's a really good radio doc.
So it's a radio doc of someone getting a Brazil. That seems like it would be a visual. I guess you wouldn't really want to see
It like kind of, it goes through the hesitation and the fear about getting a Brazilian, and it kind of, you know, arcs right before she gets it. And
Oh wow.
Yes.
Okay, well, this sounds like it's pretty open-ended. We could all, I mean, people who, it also sounds a little like people outside of the CBC can't do it, but maybe they can.
They can, yeah.
And you're obviously profiling. You could do a documentary about someone who isn't involved. You could do a documentary about anybody.
Yes, absolutely.
So, like, this person who cheered for Palmer, Saskatchewan, that's a documentary right there. I track them down, and I figure out why they cheered for Saskatchewan in Toronto.
If it's a compelling story, then there's space for it.
And so your role as the host, are you chasing stuff? Like, you're trying to get people to do it?
No, I sit in a chair and don't chase anything.
How did you get that gig?
It's a good gig if you can get it, I have to say. Oh. Just the sitting in a chair and other people doing the work, it's fantastic.
You do it really well.
Thanks.
Yeah. I was asked to read an audition for it, and they asked me back, and that's how I got it.
Okay. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of things I miss about CBC working there. Most of all, the money.
I know. There's so much.
Isn't it? It's pretty good. I liked it. I liked when they gave me lots of money.
Well,
to talk about, like, Obiju, for example.
Remember
we went for breakfast that one time?
Yeah, we go way back.
I made like $40,000 in that 2.5 hours. It was amazing.
So basically, I've gone from being a musician to being a student to being on the radio, and they're all, like, you know, carry with them their own sense of precarity.
Yeah. Oh, do you feel like? Is the show doing well? Like, do people like the show?
Yeah, people like the show, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're well-suited for this. It's great.
Oh,
I'm glad you're doing it. Now,
thank you.
Your band, Obiju, stopped playing together, and I don't exactly know. When did this stop? It was 2 years ago?
I have no idea.
Okay.
2 or 3 years ago.
2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And this was a band that seemed to be doing well. Why did the band stop?
We played for 8 years together, and, you know, it ran its course, and we all had different desires in life, and those desires weren't met by playing in a six-piece orchestral pop band in Canada. So we did different things.
But are you on indefinite hiatus?
We are definitely broken up, but we tease at getting back together every now and then just for fun, but it's nothing serious.
For whose fun?
For ours fun.
Your own fun.
Yes.
Your own fun. So your fans are like, oh my God, and you're like, ha, ha, ha.
The fan is like...
The one fan.
The one fan is like, please play a show. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you miss the band?
I do. I definitely do.
And people must ask you all the time what's going on with the band.
Yeah, they do. And I really, you know, like my band members and had a really good relationship with them, I think. So, you know, we hang out all the time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a solo record out, or coming out, called Psychic Materials.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, how solo was it? Like, is it totally you, or did you collaborate with people?
I wrote it on my own and recorded a lot of it on my own, and then reached out to friends to play instruments that I couldn't play. So that's coming out in January.
In January. Oh, that's
very soon. Yeah.
What's the actual date?
Mid-January. I have a release show on February 4th at the Art Gallery of Ontario.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Congratulations on that. Is there a label or something?
No, it's all me. It's independent, all, you know, designed and written by... It's outside of any experience I've had before in the music industry, and that was really important for me.
Because you were doing it by yourself.
Yeah, it's all by myself.
And for fans of Obijou, how much of a departure will this seem like for them? It's quite different, or...?
I hope it'll feel like a departure. There's strings in it, but...
There's strings in it.
It's a departure,
okay.
For sure.
Okay, excellent. Yes. Well, we look forward to hearing it. Now, before I let you go, there is a photograph upstairs. There's an exhibit upstairs in the hallway on the way to the conversation room. Did anyone see this? Yeah? Okay. So what it says is, Asian woman in your scene identification card, and you're on here.
Yes.
Along with five other Asian women, and the tagline at the bottom is, carry with you at all times to avoid making lazy mistakes. Tell me about this thing. It's very intriguing.
Well, it was a project initiated by April and a bunch of other people.
April from Hooded Fang.
Yes. And it's just a comment on how Asian bodies sort of get conflated with one another. So I've been mistaken for Kristen Wong Tam, which is not the case. And so it's just a comment on how we easily slip into stereotypes of Asianness and ideas that we're all the same.
I get this too.
You do?
It's happened to me, yeah.
Who do you get mistaken for?
Gandhi. People are like, can you stand beside
Wait
this loom for a second?
Are you Gandhi?
Are you Gandhi?
Right.
I get Samir Khan from the band Tusks and Kepler. Yeah. Yeah, I get Samir Khan all the time.
Right. You,
that's a Samir's a good looking guy.
I know, he should be really offended by this comparison. I got Brown George Clooney once.
That was me introducing the show.
That's right. Yeah, I get stuff too. I don't mean to make light of this, but it happens to us. And there's a tension in the city. Did you participate in this? Were you one of the participants in this discussion about music and race in Toronto?
The one that April had?
Or no, you were in the audience. Someone said you were there, but not...
I listened to it, yes.
You listened? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
I wasn't a part of it.
What do you think is happening in the city? People are seemingly... people like, this exhibit is amazing, and people are finally starting to speak up, and I'm just wondering what you think is going on, that people are feeling empowered to do that.
I think that there has been a mounting frustration about topics of race, gender, and inequity in music, and they're sort of surfacing in really interesting ways right now. In this scene in particular, it's, you know, perpetuated by the Viet Cong situation, but conversations have always been happening about race and gender and how we can make things more nuanced and representative of the array of people that participate in music in this city.
No, it's an amazing thing that's happening, and I'm glad it is. And this, that to me, that sounds like it could be a good candidate for a doc on CBC Doc, the Doc Project, don't you think?
Yeah, Samir, I think you're really onto something.
Oh, God. It's pronounced Mohandas. You can follow Casey Mesia on Twitter, @CaseyMesia, and you can follow her show's Twitter, @CBC Doc Project. Casey Mesia, everybody, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
We need to take a commercial. We'll be back. Oh, please sit, Casey. We'll be with you in just a sec. We need to take a commercial. We'll be back with more Long Night in a moment. Stick around, everybody.
The 14th annual State of the Mall benefit concert is taking place at the E-Bar in Guelph on Saturday, December 19th. This year's edition features a reunion show by Evan Gordon and the Sad Clowns, and a normal show by Blimp Rock, plus the improv comedy stylings of The Making Box and stand-up comedy by Nick Flanagan. All proceeds benefit the Canadian Cancer Society towards leukemia research in memory of Sharon Marshall. Tickets are only available at the door and are $8 with a non-perishable food donation for the Guelph Food Bank, and $10 without. The show starts at 10 p.m. and is all ages, but the E-Bar, located at 41 Quebec Street, is not a wheelchair-accessible venue. For more info, please visit vishkana.com or bookshelf.ca. Otherwise, stay out of the mall on Saturday, December 19th.
Hey, we're back really quickly. That was a quick break. Thank you. Thanks for being here. You know, 2015 is almost over, and yet some of us are still processing what it all meant. And it's time now for us to try and make sense of it all in a segment that we like to call Linda's Take. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Nice.
Please welcome our very own applause lady, Linda. Linda the applause lady. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I feel like people aren't applauding hard enough, and I feel like you're going to blame me for it later. So guys, please, like, bring the heat, please.
Okay, on the one hand, you make me sound like a monster because people aren't clapping.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Am I too hard on you with the applause lady?
No, you're not. You're just hard enough.
Now, I've heard that before. Let me, what do you want to talk about, Linda? This is your segment, Linda's Take. We really like it. What do you want to talk about?
Okay, well, you asked me to talk about some cool, hot things that happened in 2015.
Yeah.
So being like the hot young millennial I am, I texted my buddy and I asked her like, what happened in 2015? Because I have no sense of time. So I have like a cool list. We can just run through it.
Okay, sure.
All right?
Go ahead, yeah.
So here's 2015. This is your life, ladies and gentlemen, all right?
In memoriam?
Well, hopefully not.
Okay, sorry.
I don't know, maybe. No, you know that show, This Is Your Life, where like...
No, I know, I got it, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm young and hip, too.
Yeah, we're all young and cool.
Yeah.
This Is Your Life is like only like a 60-year-old show, so like we all totally know about it, no worries. All right, so this is a list that I was given. I didn't write this.
I don't think you're supposed to admit that. It's Linda's take, not Linda's friend's take when she texted her friend. It's your take.
Linda's friend's take on texting.
Do we have theme music for that? No. Okay, we'll go with the original.
Okay. Don't worry about it. Okay. Kylie Jenner's lips, Uber and taxi wars.
What? Wait a minute. Are you just going to list stuff?
Yeah, and then we'll like chat about our favorite things.
Randomly? Okay, fine, sorry.
Overalls came back in style. That guy likes it. Free the nipple. Or don't. What's your take? Don't worry about it. Drones. Are we afraid of them? I'm not. Back to the future. It's already here. Google Cardboard. I'm into it.
Wait. Google Cardboard?
Have you not heard of Google Cardboard?
No, what is that?
Okay, Google Cardboard it's like literally cardboard that you fold up into a like head-mounted device that you use for virtual reality. And
oh, I have heard it. Oh, I didn't know it was called Google Cardboard. Oh,
well,
okay.
Like that's like the trade name for it. And then you just pop your cell phone in it, and it's virtual reality. The best thing is this is the laziest thing ever, but it's called it's like a Netflix app, but it's for virtual reality, and you're in a living room, but you strap your phone to your face like that, and you're watching a big TV instead of your fucking phone strapped to your face. It's awesome.
I think we might have a small child in the audience. I'm sorry about the F-bomb. Anyway, go ahead. It's fine. That's what Linda's take is all about.
Live TV, am I right, ladies?
Yeah, it's live TV. Yeah.
Think about it.
Apologize to our sponsors. What else do you got?
The dead raccoon, rest in peace.
You know what? I got to say, you know, there's so much stuff that comes up and you try to keep up with it. I got to admit, I know everyone in this city was talking about a dead raccoon. I didn't even look at it. I just didn't. What is it? What happened with the raccoon?
You know, I think it was just a dead raccoon. But then I saw another dead raccoon in my hometown and it made me sad because he was smiling, which was unfortunate. He was like, and I was like, that guy did die doing what he loved. You know what I mean?
Wait a minute. Why? There just was a rash of dead raccoons? Across the country? I don't understand.
Well, two isn't really a rash, is it?
Well, you mentioned that one... Okay, but why are people documenting dead raccoons? I don't get it.
Because it makes you sad.
Okay, I guess we need that.
They're like cats.
They are like cats.
Right?
That's true. Okay. Anything?
It's kind of a bummer.
Is there anything?
Oh, okay. Yeah. This is like a personal thing. Yeah. But okay, so my late grandfather, rest in peace, he used to try to catch squirrels in the backyard. And so me and my father were freeing a squirrel. We didn't kill them. But he was freeing a squirrel from the backyard. And the squirrel was crying, and it made a sound I'm never going to forget but can't imitate. And it was really sad. But squirrels can cry, you guys. So they have feelings. It was like...
All right. Thanks for sharing, Linda. Maybe to wrap this up.
Okay.
No, wait.
There's more.
Oh, God.
More things happened in 2015.
Yeah,
okay,
but...
that lady who brought a baby to the Jays game and then we all had to pour our beers? Excuse you. Why are you so rich? You're bringing a baby to the 100s level.
Yeah.
What?
Wait, are you angry at the baby or the mom at this point? I can't tell.
100% both of them. Well, okay, I know that you guys think it's a six-figure job.
You can't be mad at a baby. The baby can't do anything.
Okay, you're a father, but trust me, you can be mad at a baby if you don't have kids.
Okay, can we just... Yeah, the audience is clearly on your side on that one.
They're so on my side right now. Okay.
Listen.
Cecil the lion, popping Molly,
okay,
all right?
Yeah,
Ronda Rousey getting kicked in the neck. Y'all remember it. Lena Dunham whining. I don't know if that refers to her whining.
You guys following this up there? Do you know what's going on?
Everyone's into it. Okay, that's all I have, really.
Oh, really?
That's 2015 in review.
Very good.
Oh, yeah, and Jared from Subway is a pedophile.
All right, that's
2015.
Linda's take, everybody.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
You told me to bring something I wanted to promote, and I brought this.
Stop the Insanity, Foundations of Wellness, Susan Powder. You can pick this up. Where? Where can people pick this up?
I bought it at a Value Village 3 years ago, so try that.
Okay, great. 2016, what are you looking forward to?
More virtual reality things.
Okay.
I'm going to buy they have this this head-mounted device that looks like a ViewMaster, and I'm going to buy it.
Nice.
That's my whole plan for 2016.
Great, that sounds good.
I'm going to get
good,
fit.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, too.
When we return, Toronto music writer and DJ Denise Benson will be here. Please stick around for that. Thank you.
Fourth season of Long Winter continues with Volume 3 at the Great Hall in Toronto on Saturday, January 16th, 2016. This edition features music by Valens, Loom, Mystic Triangle, Nicole Dollinganger, Michelle McAdory, Indoor Voices, Juge, Stuka, Pantano, Cora, Strands, Kiwi Jr., Young Bambi, The Seams, Bossy, and Overnight. And art performance, installation, and dance by the likes of Zoo Owl, Brett Zadravets, Tiffany Schofield, and Dorica Manuel, Marbella and Carlos, Lisa Cristinzo, Sarah Friend and Farley, Kvetch, Ben Camino, Jason Dole, Damian Lebedeski, Paloma Dawkins, and Spencer Butt. Down in the Black Box, attend a 9 p.m. taping of an episode of the talk show, Long Night with Vish Khanna, with special guests Tom Power from CBC Radio, musician Michelle McAdory, the new supergroup Tunes, and comedy by Deadpan PowerPoint. Plus, the Long Winter Arcade, curated by the Hand Eye Society. Long Winter Year 4 Volume 3 is all ages and pay what you can at the door, with $10 advance tickets available online. The Great Hall is not a wheelchair accessible venue, located at 1087 Queen Street West. Come out Saturday, January 16th at 7 p.m. and visit torontolongwinter.com for more details.
We're back on Long Night. Thank you very much for being here, sticking around. Hello to everybody in the rafters. How's everything going up there?
Great.
Good. Nice to see you all. Have you guys ever been to a live talk show taping before? What do you think?
Good.
Good. Nice. It's nice. It's a nice crowd tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice festive crowd. Our next guest is an award-winning club DJ in Toronto and an esteemed music writer who many consider a walking encyclopedia when it comes to this city's dance and electronic music culture. Her new book is out now via 3 o'clock press, and it's called Then and Now, Toronto Nightlife History. It's right here. I have a copy of it right here. Please say hello to Denise Benson. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Vish.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Now, the way the book actually came to exist is rather interesting in itself. Do you mind telling us how this thing came to life?
It came to life essentially over 4 years, so a project that took a little bit of time. It started as a web series for The Grid, and in a nutshell, it grew. The story started off, the idea initially was to write a very brief, like 500-word kind of history about a club in the city, why it was important, what the building had looked like then. If you could get a photo or two, fantastic. And then a photo of what the building is now, or what the building, you know, just to basically tracing the gentrification that way. What are the buildings now? So the first one was about one of my favorite clubs of all time, Roxy Blue, and the response was so strong that, of course, the response was, you missed this, you missed me, you missed my friends, you missed these DJs, you missed these
facts. People would respond to be like, oh, you missed stuff.
Of course, because 500 words can never tell the history of any individual place, so all of the stories grew.
Now, was this, you obviously did a lot of research, you were probably a witness to some of these things yourself, but was a lot of it crowdsourced? Was a lot of it stories from people writing to you, being like, yeah, here was my experience?
It's very much an oral history. I mean, this book would not exist without the hundreds of people who contributed their stories, their artifacts, their memories, their contacts, their photos, their music, their DJ mixes, and so on. So very much a collaborative effort.
Okay. Now, as a social history, what does the book tell us about Toronto that I think current residents in particular might be surprised about?
You know, it's interesting, as somebody who's DJed in the city for a couple of decades plus, there always seemed to be this idea that it got more and more interesting here over time. And in some ways, that's absolutely true, particularly with production.
Interesting among the music communities, you mean?
Yeah, but I think also just this notion that Toronto was this staid, boring, monolithic place in the 70s, and even before that, and that's completely untrue. In fact, the more I dug into stories and researched places that I had very little knowledge of, the more interesting it became to me, because the more I got to learn about the 70s and 80s in Toronto and how people were expressing themselves in clubs.
Casey and James, I imagine that, I mean, James, is you're the editor of Exclaim magazine. I assume that you may have noticed a marked shift in how Canada was perceived. People seem to pay more attention to Toronto in particular after, broken social scene, these kinds of things were happening. It seemed to get more of an international spotlight. Is that fair from your perspective?
I think it's come in waves and different waves for different types of music at different times. But certainly, I would say around 2000, 2001 with Three Gut Records and Broken Social Scene, like certainly the indie rock side got a lot of attention. But the Toronto, like the dance and electronic world, I certainly got a ton of attention in the late 90s. You know, I didn't live in Toronto before 1995, so I don't know, but I mean, industry, and I remember, you know, international DJ magazines listing Toronto as one of the 4 or 5 hottest cities in the world.
Right.
So. Yeah, I mean, the rave scene that was happening here, really, it did kick off in the early, you know, around 93-ish.
Yeah.
And then it grew right through the 90s and into the 2000s. It was one of the biggest rave scenes in the world. Certainly, when you looked at drum and bass and other sounds, I mean, there were periods of time in this city where you had 2, 3, 4, 5 parties every weekend of 10,000 plus people,
right,
and showcasing a lot of local talent as part of that. So definitely, whether you're talking indie rock or hip hop, electronic music and so on, you know, I think the interest that exists in Toronto or exists about Toronto in different scenes has kind of culminated in people here being able to be increasingly proud of our city, which is fantastic. And so, you know, things that a book like this is nostalgic in some ways, but it's also bringing people a history that they may not have known and actually makes the connections between people and decades and communities and music and so on. So it's really fun to be able to trace that path.
So the sort of explosion of interest in Toronto around the time that James was just describing, and in terms of indie rock and of late hip hop. Now people, because of Drake and other people, people think of Toronto as this hip hop place. None of that irks you as an electronic music fan, does it? Like the fact that all this attention is being poured into Toronto. It sounds like, as you were saying, that other magazines, international magazines, would list Toronto as an important destination for electronic music.
It is.
It still is.
it was and it is, absolutely.
So it doesn't bother you that everyone thinks of it as an indie rock city or a hip hop city.
Who's everyone?
These people. I'm just
gonna do you all think of it exclusively as an indie rock or a hip hop town, or do you think about it also as producing all kinds of reggae and R&B and of course electronic, house, techno, and so on? I mean, that's what's amazing about this city is that there's all kinds of production and talent and all kinds of different communities.
How did you actually become immersed in dance culture in Toronto yourself?
Well, let's see. Long story short, my background is more about punk rock and dance music, dub music. The intersection of dub and punk to me is like the rhythms, basically. But what happened to me, like many people, I got taken to a warehouse party in later 80s. I mean, the house scene here was really kicking off in the late 80s. It had already kicked off in, obviously, in New York and... New York, Chicago, Detroit had its techno scene, obviously also related to house music, but a lot of that was happening here too, very much born and related to those cities, but the warehouse scene here in the late 80s into the 90s was really quite amazing, and you had a ton of people, Dino and Terry, Nick Holder, Stickman, and so on, producing very, very vibrant.
In recent years, it's seemed like electronic music and, I guess for lack of a better term, rave culture in this city has been under attack. It seems like city officials have been going after these kinds of events more than maybe they have others. Do you have any thoughts on that? Am I wrong about that? I don't live in the city. I'm something of a rube. But from what I understand, this is happening. Do you feel threatened as someone who represents this culture?
I wish I was more funny than earnest, but unfortunately, in this context...
I also wish I was more funny.
I am seriously earnest and earnestly serious. You know, the rave scene was massively under attack in the late 90s into the early 2000s. The game really changed at that point. That's also part of why a lot of electronic music in the city moved more into licensed venues, because... there was a point when the city was cracking down on warehouse parties, unlicensed venues.
Yeah.
You know, you had to hire security guards, hire the cops, and so on. I've found that that has come and gone in waves. And what's happening now, obviously the influence of rave music is here, but EDM and rave are two vastly different things.
Okay. Oh, so sorry, the culture that you represent, you don't feel is being scrutinized... the same way other cultures?
The way that the rave scene was scrutinized in the later 90s into early 2000s is a little bit different than what you see now with the massive EDM events and the massive EDM festivals and
see.
So on, where,
okay.
I mean, still there has to be a ton of police, but it's also a much more, there's a lot more dollars in the industry, there's a lot more investment, and there's a different way of, I guess because it's mass culture now, everybody's really paying attention to it, and so obviously the promoters do, and there's a lot more money to be made as well.
Yeah. There's an interesting quote in the biographical info about this book. It suggests that Then and Now, the book, is an evocative, timely exploration of both Toronto after dark and the ways in which nightclubs and social spaces tend to foreshadow gentrification trends. This has not occurred to me before. How do nightclubs and social spaces predict gentrification?
In the same way that art galleries do. I mean, it's less about predicting, more about leading the way. I mean, people open creative venues in parts of town where rent's affordable, and then people go to those places, and then more people go to those places, and then those places become popular, rent goes up, and then businesses that have more money move in. So... I mean, we see that now in Toronto with Parkdale, obviously, Ossington, and, you know, for years I was kind of pointing to my area, which is up Davenport way, and just seeing what's been happening on DuPont lately and Geary and so on, it's necessary because these spaces need to exist. The galleries need to exist, creative places where people can make more independent experimental music. Those places need to exist, but again, once the audiences find them and the crowds go, you know, they take off.
Right, yeah.
Rent goes up and the cycle continues.
We've kind of found that with this space, the Great Hall. I feel like more people are using this. I've hadn't even heard of this place until a few years ago. Now everyone seems to be using it as like a key. It seems to be like a bit of a cornerstone for a certain culture in the city.
Actually, I think I saw Sonic Youth down here. It might have been upstairs. I can't remember, but a fire broke out.
You saw Sonic Youth upstairs? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the Elliot Lefko used to produce a lot of shows here. Tons and tons of great concerts.
Like what era of Sonic Youth do you remember?
That would be probably 91-ish.
Oh, okay. Wow. So this building's amazing. Yeah. And it sounds like you think these buildings are important. I mean, this isn't a makeshift space. Sometimes it feels that way. But
well, at the moment, you know, it's a little bit
yeah,
different
it's
than
under
it has
construction.
Been points.
It's true. There are occasions where music scene veterans, sometimes we get into a habit of scoffing at the next generation of producers, the next generation of presenters. And maybe it's healthy, maybe it's not. You know, maybe we did it right, they're not doing it right, they're doing it their own way. How would you compare what's happening in Toronto's, in your case, in the electronic music scene, today to, I don't know, a particularly significant bygone era? Is everything happening today the way you think it could be? Is there stuff that needs to be done?
I feel like it would be really pompous to to answer that. I mean, I think what is true is that, you know, every generation has things that they gravitate toward and things that they create and sounds that they create. And obviously, anything that's created has some relationship to the past and has influences and so on. But I mean, whenever I hear someone of any age say, it was so much better than my day, you know,
yeah.
That's just lazy thinking because there's always some really cool shit happening everywhere all the time. And Toronto is exploding with talent all over the place. And that's why something like Long Winter is so amazing, right? Because it brings together music and art and DJ culture and performance and so on. And I think the more you have places where that can happen, the more vibrant a city can be because we can actually all meet each other and, you know, collaborate in different contexts and so on. And that's what certainly is happening with the electronic scene, just like with the rock scene, hip-hop scene, anything else.
Right. Now, you've got this this book has come out, and it seems to be doing well for you. What's coming up next for you?
The dreaded question. You know, I think whenever anybody is between projects, that's like the most frightening question because you go, well, I could do this or that or this, but there's a few things I really am looking forward to doing now that there's a bit more time with the website, because there's actually, so of the 48 stories that are in the book, I mentioned Roxy Blue was written early on, for example, also Industry, another early one I wrote was about Twilight Zone, and those were initially like 500-700 word stories, people are waving back there, and I rewrote them, completely expanded them for the book. They're now, okay. You know, they got the full then and now 5,000 word treatment. So pieces like that I'm actually going to now be building for the website, which is thenandnowtoronto.com. So there's a lot of kind of bringing now where the series grew to become the book. Now
right.
There's a number of things in the book that can be expanded upon and brought to the
right,
website.
Right.
And there's a number of other projects that people have kind of suggested in relation to the book, some really cool artifacts. I mean, I have to say that, again, this book would not exist had so many people not given of their time and their stories and their memories and their photos. And as somebody who's DJed for a long time, it really made me realize how crappy I am at keeping photos and flyers and my own mementos. And thankfully, other people are far better at that. And there's a lot of rich material about Toronto's history that thankfully people have shared with me. So I'm hoping to bring more of that forward.
Nice. That's great. And now you're DJing later tonight, right? Here?
Correct. One until we close upstairs in the main room.
You're going to be DJing, so people can go check out DJ Denise Benson. You can go do that.
Alongside Dougie Boom.
I have a question.
Oh.
Denise, I have a question about your record collection.
Yes, James. It's still not organized.
I was going to say, if I were to pick a random 12-inch from 1998 and say, Denise, go find it, how long do you think it would take you?
If you wanted a specific one, or you just said to me 1998?
No, I know you could get me something from 1990. No, a specific one.
What is your record collection like? I don't know anything about this.
It's large, and it's basically what happens over the years, unless you're somebody who's more meticulous than I am, is you bring your records home from clubs and then you put them on shelves and they become kind of sections that represent different clubs. I'll pull out things and I'll be like, oh, I was playing all of this when I was at Catch 22 or Boom Boom Room or whatever the case is. So it depends, James. It might take me 5 minutes. If you said to me, where's Tricky Disco? Or some other warp stuff, I could find you that right away.
Right. Yeah.
What, so can we get a figure? Like, do you have any idea how many records you have, roughly?
I was wise enough to get rid of a lot in my last move. I'd say at this point, 8,000 to 10,000.
You have 8,000 to 10,000 records. Wow, that's amazing.
You really got rid of a lot. Wow. It used to be at least twice that size.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, geez, will you be playing any of them from your personal collection tonight?
I brought CDs tonight, many of which have tracks that I do have on
okay.
vinyl. Yeah.
People can follow Denise on Twitter at DJ Denise Benson, and the website for the book is thenandnowtoronto.com. There are copies of this book for sale upstairs, so we hope you'll pick them up. How about a round of applause for Denise Benson? All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we have stand-up comedy by the very, very funny Matt O'Brien. So stay where you are. Matt O'Brien. Denise, thank you so much for being on the show. A gaggle of Guelphites have recorded a tribute to the recently reunited group Ween. Guelph Ween Satan consists of 18 home-recorded songs spanning Ween's entire catalog, including contributions by Gregory Pepper and His Problems, Nick Zubek, Jesse Bell Smith, Matt Manoogian, Jenny Omnicord, Tyson, and many more. Limited edition cassettes with artwork by Drawn and Quarterly Comics star Mark Bell are for sale at Royal Cat Records in Guelph, and you can stream or download this compilation for free at guelphweensatan.bandcamp.com. So go, listen to Guelph Ween Satan. Not now, after this podcast. After the podcast, go listen to Guelph Ween Satan and see what all of the fuss is about. Welcome back, a long night. Thank you very much for sticking around, everybody. I just want to mention that our next episode will air here at the Great Hall on January 16th, and our scheduled guests thus far are Canadian music legend and former Crash Vegas singer Michelle McAdory, and also the comedy team known as Deadpan PowerPoint, and more. So come back for that show. Oh, also a reminder that this show is being recorded for a podcast. You guys are all on a podcast. How does that feel? Yeah. The Creative Control with Vishkana podcast, which you can learn more about at vishkana.com. And that's coming up. This will be up soon if all goes well. Our next guest is an award-winning comedian who hosts Toronto's Subway Talk Show. How about a warm ovation for Matt O'Brien, ladies and gentlemen. Matt O'Brien.
Hey, how you doing? What's happening? What a night. What a crazy night. Woo, that intro. That's my song. That's the song I asked for. How you guys feel? You guys feel good?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you guys see that couple aggressively making out right there? That was crazy. They were fucking going for it. Just didn't care that there was a talk show in front of them.
Hi.
What a weird place to do. They're not there anymore. Or they could be laying down. I don't know. They were definitely grade 10 dry humping like crazy, and it was, where else are you gonna do it, right? This is the perfect basement for it. A basement that looks like somebody for sure tried to make a Frankenstein in. It's 100%. Doesn't this basement look like Adrian Brody should be learning surgery in the 1800s, you know what I mean? You guys excited to go home for Christmas and get woken up by your dad emptying the dishwasher? Whoa, I can't wait. Can't wait till every fucking 7 in the morning. Is there certain, do you just hit a certain age as a man where you just like empty the dishwasher with only your fists? I don't understand why it's so loud. That, or I'm going to get woken up by him yelling at the cat to get down from something. That's very exciting. It doesn't help that the cat's name is Stuart, too. It has a human name. So it's either dishwasher or Stuart, get down from there! Get down from there, Stuart! So it just sounds like a man named Stuart is loose in our house every morning. That's great. I like being in Toronto. I live right around the block. This is convenient and fun. I tour around the country. I swear to God, this happens more often than not. It's like, somebody will come up to me and they'll find out I'm from Toronto. They're like, hey, you're from Toronto, right? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, do you ever go to the CN Tower? And I'm like, no, never. Who lives here and goes to the CN Tower? You know what I mean? Like, first of all, why are you going? Are you just like, there it is, like, just to look at it? Like, the only, like, I think any local would agree with this. Like, the only time you look at the CN Tower is it, like, if you're really drunk and you want to figure out what part of town you're in. That's the only time you ever, like, you measure it out. You're like, ah, shit, I'm in Orillia. I am too far away. Why did I get... I think our city is getting too big, too, because I was walking down Queen Street the other day and I saw a man comfortably unicycling, not getting punched in the face. Isn't that crazy? Like, our city's so big, and it's so many people that there's a guy out there like, well, off to work. And then unicycling off to work. Get out of here. And the best part is it like, everybody in the block, like audibly scoffed and groaned. Like, it like ruined a whole block. Just one man unicycling, everyone's like, oh, get out of here. What if tourists see this? They're at least lowering property values. You gotta realize that. If you're unicycling around, people are like, well, the rent's a lot cheaper now. Just went from 800 to 400. That's good. Ha ha! Living it! I was eating a Krispy Kreme donut the other day, and my girlfriend is like, you know, that's equivalent to one Big Mac. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't give a care. That's how someone that eats a Krispy Kreme would talk. I don't give a care. Get out of here. And then, like, I was reading another article about Cobb salads, and they're like, do you think it's healthy? It's equivalent to three Big Macs. Like, Big Macs is the go-to shitty food measurement for everything. Like, where does it stop? Breaking up with your girlfriend, 800 Big Macs. Global warming, 1 million Big Macs. Right? Stubbing your toe, 2 billion Big Macs. Like, I feel like if aliens are intercepting our conversations, like, they're monitoring our communications to find our weaknesses, like, they're like Big Macs. We're gonna invade in giant floating Big Macs. 100%. You're right, that joke's too new to do tonight. You see how it petered off at the end? Am I checking notes on a late night set? Wow, this is how I do Letterman. Can you imagine coming out and checking your phone? What the fuck else are we talking about? I donated blood the other day because I felt guilty about being a comedian. I woke up at noon for the 8th day in the row and started playing video games, and I was like, I should donate my fluids. That's the easiest way to do it. I was like, that'll clear the slate, right? Get my fluids, my one fluid out there, right? And I went to go donate, and I don't know if you donated recently, but there's you got to answer all these questions, and the last question is, I swear to God, it says, have you handled a monkey in the last 7 days? And I want to say yes someday, so bad. I want to show up in like a dirty safari hat and a tank top, be like, well, I gotta go. You got me, I've been hit. Like, first of all, what person is like covered in monkeys and like, get off me, I gotta donate blood? Like, there's nobody, what? And also, like, what are the people that like take care of monkeys at the zoo? Are they like the biggest pieces of shit? Because we're like, they'll never donate their blood. They've made a choice. They choose monkeys over humans. Living in the city is different because I grew up on a farm. Anyone grew up on a farm here? Really? Basement of a Great Hall, Toronto, downtown? Nobody? I grew up on a farm and wait. That'll look really good. Wait, do one of these, hold on. Like I'm like. That's me bombing, for sure. They'd be like, he almost had the crowd with that point and then lost him. What happened? But I grew up on a farm, and any other farm people will agree with this. My number one fear growing up on a farm, every other farm person's number one fear, UFOs, 100%. Because if movies have taught me anything, UFOs fuck around with farm people first, before city people. That's everything, every movie I've ever seen is some kid in his overalls just like in a cornfield like, Pa, was that you? Is that you, Pa? It's never Pa, right? You never see a UFO movie start with like, they never suck a guy out of his basement apartment window just like, ugh, this is fine. I used to be very afraid of ghosts as well, which, you know, I lived in a creaky old farmhouse, and I'm also afraid of ghosts in this building as well. Like, look at all these skinned ghosts. Some ghost hunter, some professional ghost hunter. I used to be really afraid of ghosts, which I think is first of all, I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in ghosts 100%. I know that some people do, I don't. Which is always, I can always confidently say I don't believe in ghosts when like people are around me. Like when I'm alone, I believe in ghosts 100%. Like that's when they're the most scary, right? Because I just have too many questions about ghosts. Like if they're real, like in my apartment building, like if there's a ghost in one apartment, can it drift through to the other ones? Like what is the rule with, like, do you have to haunt a house? Like what if you die in a tent? Do you have to haunt that tent? Like they just get rolled up for 8 months of the year and you're just haunting a rolled up piece of nylon in the basement? I don't know what the rules are. And like I didn't, like, because ghosts aren't scary when you're with people, right? Like it's like when you're with your friends, you're telling ghost stories. You're like, yeah, fuck, I don't care. Tell fuck dead people. Who cares? And then you go home that night and you're like, I shouldn't have said fuck dead people. Why didn't I say that? You guys have been great. Thank you guys very much. I'm Matt O'Brien. Have a great night, everybody. Late Night Talk Show.
Matt O'Brien.
Hi.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for doing the show.
Thanks for having me.
Have a seat.
Is this the right mic?
No, you can use. Yeah. Very funny.
Hi. How are you? To see you.
These guys really want to play that song. Good job, Bicycles.
That's great. You guys are great. You guys are really playing it.
Matt, that was very funny. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for indulging that new joke I tried. That's what you do on late night shows, right?
Now, you and I met under interesting circumstances. We were both at Much Music for an audition.
Yes. Yes.
Do you remember this?
Yes, I do.
It was kind of weird. They didn't tell us anything. We just showed up, and they said they wanted to put us on TV. And then we did. You? How did you do? Did you do okay in your audition?
I thought it was okay.
Yeah. It was weird.
Wasn't that the revamp of Video on Trial?
Yeah. Or no? It was some weird culture show where we just made fun of stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't really.
I feel like
enjoy
we're doing a show in a bus station right now.
Yeah. People are.
There's just people like traveling. Like we're in Union Station right now. They're like, I gotta get to work. Can we get this fucking show out of the way?
Now, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is because you are technically an arch rival.
That's true.
You have your own talk show.
It's me, you, and Frank D'Angelo. If you know who that is, congratulations. You watch Rogers at 2 a.m.
What is the Subway talk show for people who haven't seen it?
Me and my one friend with the camera thought it'd be funny if I hosted a late night talk show on a busy subway. And so I treat the subway like a late night talk show. I wear a blazer and I hold a mug and I interview comedians that get on at different stops. So far the TTC doesn't care, and I don't know why. I've had workers get on and see it, and I'm like, can you keep it down? We're filming. And they're like, okay. Like, because I feel like TTC workers, they're individual. Like, they don't know who's in charge. They're like, did Pam say this is fine? I actually called the line, too, and I was like, hey, do I need a permit to host a late night talk show on one of your subway cars? And they were like, I don't know any of the words that you just said right now. No one's ever called with that. And they're like, just don't be weird. Like, don't disrupt people. And I'm like, it's fine. I won't.
So you're in a situation where you and your guests know what's going on. What are the onlookers, the other commuters, what do they think of this experience?
Oh, they think it's exciting. There was a guy on shrooms, and he thought that was very confusing. He was from Australia, and he was clearly on mushrooms. And he was like, is this Canada? Is this how you guys ride the subway? Just interviewing on a late night talk show? I've had like, there was a woman with her groceries and like, yeah, she was beside, and then we were interacting with her and she was like, just put me in the credits. And I was like, well, sure, whatever. And then the latest episode, spoiler alert, a homeless guy pisses behind us on the subway. Oh yeah. It was very, you can't write that stuff. Was it you? I like how his friend didn't even yes and him on that.
Yeah, that was.
It wasn't you! Don't try to be funny! I didn't have to respond to that heckle. That's the first time it's ever happened. Somebody heckled, and somebody beside is like, shut up! This is not for you! I'm sure you could piss very well on the subway. I mean, yeah. Let's go. I'll see you in the alley.
We'll see you in the alley.
What am I doing? You can audition to piss on my show.
What is coming up next for you?
Oh, boy. Well,
I heard you just got, you're working with Much. You're a Much creator, right?
A Much creator, yes.
What does that mean?
It means I have access to their green screen room. And I basically have it there. Being a Much creator is like they're like, hey, you want to make YouTube videos? Use all of our stuff.
Yeah.
So I just have access to their studios and all that stuff.
Have you made something yet?
I've made it, yeah, a bunch of things. I made this one video with Rodrigo Stoll, who's a sketch guy. I don't know if you know who that is.
Yeah.
But it's two naked guys colliding in space. You have to watch it. That's actually pretty much it. their butts touch in space. I'm just really using their stuff and making stuff that doesn't make any sense, which I can see is kind of pissing them off.
Can you use their stuff for the Subway talk show?
Yeah.
Would that be, like, what if you get busted finally? Would they be on the hook as well?
Yeah, but wouldn't that make good press? Exclaim? I don't know. I don't know. Well,
okay.
I'm going to keep using their stuff and see what happens.
And how often does the Subway talk show air?
Oh, air. On YouTube?
Yeah.
Every couple of months. I'm filming two episodes on Tuesday night. So if you ride the subway, you're on a live set. So act appropriately. my guests will be Steph Tolev and television's Ennis Esmer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So and then we'll be doing somewhere on
good for you.
On the Bloor line. Ride the Bloor line, and you could be in the live studio audience for $3.
And do you have any other stand-up shows coming up?
I'll be doing Yuck Yucks Vaughn, New Year's Eve. They said, do you want to do Massey Hall or Yuck Yucks Vaughn? And I said, bring on the Vaughn, baby. Let's go talk about a bunch of people that live near Canada's Wonderland.
You can follow Matt on Twitter @Matt_O'Brien, and you can follow Subway Talk Show on Twitter as well. How about a hand for Matt O'Brien, everybody? Very funny.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for being on the show. All right, that's the show. You can follow me on Twitter @VishKhanna, or you can follow the podcast @VishCreative, creative with a K, and Creative Control with VishKhanna is on Facebook. Long Winter on Twitter is @LongWinterTO. James is @ExclaimEditor. The Bicycles are @TheBicycles. You guys are on Twitter too, I'm sure. Share your information among yourselves. Thank you very much for joining us here in 2015. We will see you in the new year. Good night, everybody!